Okay, well, good. All right. Welcome, everybody. My name is Brian Barlow, Deputy Commissioner of DPS and co-chair of the Alaska Land Mobile Radio Executive Council. Today's April 18th, 2024. It's the time and place here for our council meeting. Called the meeting to order. I don't really have any opening statements. I think I was probably mouthing off there enough here when I walked in the door. So I don't have anything, any other words of wisdom or announcements. The roll, I think we need to take the roll here. Is there somebody in house?
Yes.
Okay. Thanks so much. If you would, sir.
Yeah. Okay. So we have in person myself, Tony Nasiak. We have Deputy Commissioner, Mr. Brian Barlow. We have Mr. John Rockwell, Mr. Paul Fussy, Mr. Nick Benestock, Mr. Scott Stormo, Mr. David Reed, Mr. Tim Woodall, Mr. Joe Fixa, and Ms. Mary. On the phone, we have Deputy Chief Mike Curley, Mr. Bradley Wayland, and Mr. Pete Rogel.
And Jim Nickel Motorola.
And Jim Nickel Motorola. Thank you. Is there anyone else on the phone or in person that I haven't called?
Yeah, this is Trig Erickson from the municipality, and I think it's worth noting that Mike Curl is still actually chief for a few more days.
Thank you. Is there anyone else that I have missed in person or on the phone? Okay, hearing none, that's the end of roll.
All right. Sounds like we're set. As we discussed before with that, we have a quorum and we can continue to move forward here. Before we move on to meeting minutes, would like to acknowledge Anchorage Police Department Chief Michael Curl and his service to the municipality of Anchorage and to the United States of America. Chief Curl's going to be moving on to his next adventure here at the end of the month. I think starting with, it's all kinds of fun stuff going on there. So, Chief, if you're still listening to me at all, I'm just here to acknowledge your service there. So thanks so much, and thanks for being part of the executive board here. So,
hey, thanks, Brian. Just so you guys know, Captain Cross will be taking over as chief. She's not going to appoint deputy chiefs right away. I imagine the next meeting will be in July, and by then we should have a pretty good picture at APD who the chief and deputy chiefs will be going forward. And I've already informed her probably to assign her deputy chief of administration to act on the executive council here. Just look, Bianca will be chief. You can send emails to her, and hopefully we'll get someone assigned to the executive council here as soon as possible.
Okay. All right. Thanks, Chief. I appreciate it. That's helpful information, input, and direction there. And who was it? You said the interim was you said there was a captain that you were going to put in?
Captain Cross. Captain Cross is the chief in waiting.
I understand. I just, not that I'm trying to boot you out the door, but I already associate her as chief for us. But we're not going to forget about you.
So do I, Brian.
Yes, I know. I'm reading between the lines there. So, thanks, Chief. I appreciate it. Anything else? Anyone else would like to add before I move on? Okay, super. Moving on to previous meeting minutes, assume everybody's had a chance to review the meeting minutes from the January 18th meeting. Any questions regarding that? Any comments about those meeting minutes? Okay. I don't have anything to add. Anyone online or on the phone there have anything to add or questions?
I'm not on the phone, but I will bring up that Colonel Meerstein will be moving on as the from Alaskan Command over to another organization, and he will be out in July. So I'm not sure if he'll be attending another executive council.
Okay, so not here today. I'll have to reach out to him. So
So he had me sitting in for him today, of course. But so I don't know.
Okay.
His replacement won't be until the latter part of July. I don't know if he'll be here in time
either or not
to take the first meeting or not. But
so you'll have to wear the ground there.
Yes, sir.
At least for more meetings. So, but that's good information. Yeah. So July, early July timeframe, you'll
right.
He'll be out.
Okay.
All right. That's helpful.
Not good for us, but
no. Understand.
We'll miss him.
Change.
Yeah.
The only constant is change. So, okay. Thank you. Again, back to the January 18th meeting minutes. Not seeing any comments or anything like that. With that, I'd like to see if there's a motion to approve the January 18th meeting minutes as presented and written. I get a motion.
I got dropped off, sir, so work on your motion. I'll get back.
Okay. Well, Paul's doing his thing there. I'll go ahead and forward a motion or present a motion to approve the January 18th meeting minutes from the ALMR Executive Council meeting as written.
Proxy second that if I'm authorized.
Proxy second. So
yeah.
It's like a super special second there. So and then all right. So
Cliffy, you're first?
Yep. So I had the motion, and for the record, seconded by
Mr. Woodall.
Yes. Okay. Good to go.
On behalf of Colonel Bierstein.
Good to go. Thank you, sir. Moving on to old business, we'll go down the list here. SIGBE stuff. Mr. Rockwell, did you want to have comments on that?
It's still tabled at the time. Like the good news is I've just completed interviews for a 911 coordinator, which is part of that whole interoperability governing body that we're trying to get. And it'll be a few weeks before I can officially make an offer. But once I can do that, maybe we can start working back on that safety topic.
Okay.
But as it is today, it's still stable.
Just trying to stabilize the environment first. So.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you.
Easy. Any questions on that topic for Mr. Rockwell? Long-term cost share solution.
Right. And at this time, we have no updates, as you can imagine, with the budget talks in Juneau. Now is not the right time to say, well, we need to up taxes or get more money through different means or what have you. It's not that we're not moving forward or continuing to come up with ways, whether it's going to be your license plate or your fish tickets or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But at this time, we have nothing to add to the discussion.
Okay. All right. And in consistency's sake, any questions for John on that?
Okay. But did you think of this? Nick, you're supposed to say that.
You appear to be the one that says that to me.
Yeah, I do.
And just for clarification, for those that are on the phone or online or whatnot, if I'm asking if anybody's got comments or questions, then please remember that that's pertains to you as well. We're not forgetting about you. Next item, fiduciary responsibility documentation. Mr. Woodall.
Yes, updates on that is one of the long poles in the tent in moving forward on establishing the processes and procedures and responsibilities related to fiduciary responsibility and in this case, third-party contract relationships with the state of Alaska. We really had to work out the U.S. Army Alaska transfer into the 11th Airborne and then understand organizationally, who would be paying, at what level that would be paying, what organizations would be responsible, the U.S. Army Alaska has made some changes, as you've probably seen, in terms of the user council. And they have moved the responsibility away from the 11th Airborne, which the 11th Airborne doesn't really have a garrison level mission, and moved it down towards the garrison level command structure. So, and what we would call installation command level. So we're working through that process. That will help us then to get the right responsible people and agencies identified in the agreement that can coordinate on it and that would carry the responsibilities to ensure that invoices are paid and budgeting is done correctly and participate in contract type activities. So we think we can start moving a little bit faster now that has been ironed out. But that was the long pull in the tent that was brought everything to kind of a halt until it was all worked out. So I think we're there and we can move forward getting that documentation in line and then bring it over to the state to work through their processes from a contracting standpoint. In what I would call our legal department calls a third party contract relationship with the state of Alaska, meaning that the state of Alaska is a contract administrator. The DOD is any agency that utilizes that contract for services is in essence a third party. So we would address the responsibilities of the third parties in that process. So sorry about using all the legal terms, but no, it's an education for me as well. We have to use the right language to make it work properly. So I would hope to see some movement. It's been stalled, but we'll keep working it, and hopefully by July we'll have moved it to the state for their response. Okay. That's all I have. Pending any questions?
I don't have a question, sir, but I do have just a statement. The concept has already been vetted. So, you know, once the documentation gets forward, you know, we've already worked through what it would take to implement on the state side. And I don't think there's anybody that has questioned what we're trying to do here. We understand that we need to have a single source for the vendor. We need to make sure that the funding is guaranteed, you know, by that, and we can have then the mechanism to be able to accept the funding and pay for the contracts. I mean, having it be bifurcated or separated or whatever technical term you want to use, and it's like, oh well, you know, the DOD doesn't have money, or the municipality doesn't have money, or the whatever. I mean, it's like it's been very difficult to juggle because we are all on different fiscal cycles, different budget periods, different, you know, as far as who's in charge. I mean, you know, whether it's the you know, the mayor or the governor or whatever, you know. And so it's going to be so much, I was going to say streamlined, you know,
right,
or streamlined, mm-hmm, once we get this done.
Correct.
Will we have to update the codicil or any of the other documentation as we go?
No, this will be an agreement that points to the cooperative agreement. I forget the technical name of the overall arching top cooperative agreement. That document would be the source, and this would be a sub agreement, okay, to that.
Thank you.
If that makes sense.
Makes sense.
And as John said, the purpose of that would be to streamline the processes and responsibilities and identify the responsibilities of the agencies for providing funding, for participating in contracts, understanding their contract responsibilities, complying with the contract administrator, the contract administrator's requirements for paying invoices, providing funding ahead of the contract period of performance, all of those sorts of things would be identified in there, would be acknowledged by the parties as a responsibility. And it would probably, it will lay out a penalty fee if you fail to, you know, interest fee if you fail to do that. So no one's getting an interest fee unknowing or saying, well, you never said we would get that. I mean, all of those types of things related to the transfer of money, participation in contracts will all be laid out in that. That's our goal anyways.
And another important aspect to this for the good of the order is that the service level agreement is based on all the infrastructure. I mean, we don't want someone to come up and say, you mean that generator that's in my tower, it's in my shelter, that it's on my land, I'm responsible for it. I never knew that. I mean, you know, hopefully this will be able to identify all of those aspects. So then we can say, yes, that generator battery, whatever, you know, needs to be updated, fixed, replaced, repaired, blah, blah, blah. And we'll have the associated responsible party understand that, yes, when it's identified, then, you know, who needs to do it. It's not all Scott Stormwell, you know, which I keep on saying.
That's how we had it written.
I know.
We just had one person in Scott Stormwell.
The first one. In fact, the title of the document was the Scott Stormwell document, you know.
And now we're going to have to come up with 10 other pages.
Okay. But yes, yeah, that's the goal. And so long needed. So we'll be happy to get that in place. I think that'll. A lot of the issues that we've had with relationship to funding and of course, paying contract invoices and so forth should be eliminated in this process.
Good. Sounds like streamlining. Everybody knows their role and how to do it. And being part of wonderful bureaucracies like you and I are is a good thing.
Especially when you have people changing every couple of years. It's good to have a document that you can get them to understand the relationships.
Tim, how does that document pertain to the muni?
Well, again, when it goes to the state will espouse its relationships and the responsibilities. And Muni will coordinate on that, of course, as it plays out, if they're involved in any contract activities. But in response to their ability to get funding for upgrades and follow life cycle plans and so forth, they'll, of course, be included in that'll be identified as a responsibility, and there'll be a process that will be followed so that all of the agencies are coordinating so that we ensure that we have funding for upgrades. Of course, that, as I said in my last presentation here, or when we discussed this last week, one of the critical parts of that is incorporating into that plan, the life cycle management plan for a 10-year period, understanding and always updating that and having an outlook of years ahead. So it gives the agencies the time period to do the financial funding and budgeting and working with legislators or so forth to get money appropriated for those things. And then it will hopefully set up a process where we more closely coordinate those appropriated actions where we're in line with each other and we're communicating more closely. As part of the executive council, I suspect that's how that'll be addressed. It's not fully written out. That's something that has to be discussed among the parties and how do we want to see that managed and so forth. But
it'd be good to see the document, see the plan. So
thank you. So hopefully, again, to address the financial complexities that we have, just like different fiscal years, different planning processes, identifying them, people understanding them, and then finding a way to align them and coordinate them is the purpose, if that makes sense.
Questions on that topic, comments? Thank you. Okay, moving on, radio inventory. Nobody's talking about that. Just kidding. Serious. So, yeah, radio inventory. Paul, did you want updated information?
Yes, thanks, Mr. Chair. I'd be happy to. For the record, I'm Paul Fussy. What we've been doing since the January meeting, it showed here in the notes, I did send out a email to every single member agency what the radios they had that were listed TDMA or FDMA per the registration number. So what we're looking at now, once we go full TDMA and everything is up to speed, we can go through and look at radios that are actually transmitting TDMA. And I'll give an example. So you have, we were talking to a certain group this past week to join ALMR. They have Apex 8000 that are purchased, but TDMA was not an option they purchased with the radio. So that all those radios need to flash upgrade. But for us, when Nick and I are looking at the system, Apex 8000 should be TDMA. But we can't say with 100% certainty that the TDMA-capable radio right now has TDMA on it. But once we go full TDMA, December 31st, 2026, we can see on the system if that radio is indeed transmitting TDMA. And if it's not, then we can reach out to those entities and have them do a flash upgrade or software upgrade with those radios. But for right now, I'm getting ready to go through again, ask Nick and his team to create another spreadsheet for me and now sending out another group of emails to every individual. I'm going to be doing that every quarter until December 31st, 2026 to make sure we are up to speed and we are progressing towards fully TDMA. And then we are getting still quite a few subscriber requests from agencies to delete the non-TDMA radios from the system as they gather more. So that's where we're at with that, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Questions on inventory?
Not a question, sir, but again, a statement. This has become a huge discussion point within the public safety community. As you are aware that it's difficult sometimes to budget for new equipment, whether it's radios, computers, horses, cars, whatever. And so there's been a lot of discussion on how many do we really need? What Paul described as far as doing that quarterly send out, it is having people think about how many do radios do I really have, right? If I look at the current list for example, just AST, it might say, you know, we have 2,800 radios. And then AST would go, but I only have the need for like 950, right? Well, where are all the other radios? Do we have sponsored accounts through search and rescue? Do we have, and then it's identifying those other topics that, you know, we need to think. Do I have cached radios? And if I have cached radios, how many cached radios do I truly need? And so in a way, this is doing like a spring cleanup. We're forcing the issue of how many radios do you have, how many radios do you need? And we're starting to talk about, well, and if there is a charge to have a radio connected to the system, then ask that same question. How many radios do you have? How many radios do you need? Not saying that there will be. And don't get me wrong that I'm floating that idea, but I just want to have people think about if this was my system and I had to pay for it, right? Do what I really need that many radios in cash? Because if I do, am I updating them? Am I charging the batteries? Am I able to pass by? What's the process? And so everything that we're doing, especially in the OMO office to alert everybody of what is on the system, has had some very, very, very positive effects on thinking about, the number of radios and the true usage for that.
So, makes sense. It's good to go back and kind of determine really what you need, right?
Yeah.
Since the last upfit, and we had, you know, yeah, 1,800 radios sitting in cache, never having powered them on.
Right.
It's our initial test. So it's a healthy exercise and obviously directly impacts budgets and with big fleets and with their ability to update and upgrade. So
let me ask the question. Councilettes, how are they being addressed in the TDMA?
They would show up as a radio on the system. Is there an APS based on what we're talking about, Rolla? That would show up as TDMA capable again. That doesn't necessarily mean it is TDMA, or they would show up as an XTL model that would.
I guess I'll reword that and say the users are considering their subscriber handheld systems. Are they also considering mobile radios and consoles and consulates?
Through the chair, Mr. Woodall. So when I talk to the agencies and our member organizations, I remind them about their consulate, their dispatch centers. One of the big shocks with aircraft radio. Okay, you need to make sure that you're going up there and your vessels. Those are all part of the system on there because you have a forestry aircraft, the FBI has a couple aircraft, the DPS has a huge aircraft fleet, and then you start looking at forestry has their own boat, National Forest does, DPS has their own boat. So when I talk to them, I make sure that they understand all the radios, not just the portables. Everything and anything that they have that on the system as well.
Okay, thank you. That's all I was just trying to clarify. Yeah. Hopefully, I have that said so that it's
not there. It's not 2,800 portables,
right?
It's radio.
Yeah, every radio that you're going to transmit on has to comply.
And as you know, there's no dumb question, right? Because this question came up recently where a year ago I was told by, let's say, the AST radio coordinator. We don't have really one, but how many radios? Well, I need like 150. And then recently it's like, no, I need 450. Well, wait a minute. Where, what? And they go, because I wasn't counting the mobiles. I wasn't counting the vessels. I wasn't counting the aircraft, right? Radios. So, Tim, what you just asked was a very relative question that we need to be making sure that we don't go, oh, no, we didn't, you know, kind of thing.
Yeah, I was going to have to be provocative.
Yeah, I can do that. Yeah.
I'll do the double check, sir.
You're a good company for that. So,
okay.
Questions, comments? Anything else on that, Paul?
Okay. Sure.
Okay, next item, the Fairbanks Rabinowitz Courthouse. BDA. I know that I kind of brought that up initially, and the big elephant in the room was the funding for it. Still working on that. Don't know that I have a real update on that. However, the request to rescope some different capital funds is with OMB now, and it's under consideration. It's very possible that determination. There's a lot of budget stuff going on in state government right now, so they're a little bit tasked with that. But in reality, in a relative sense, it could be very soon that we hear back from OMB on the decision regarding the rescope of some capital funds that would fund this work. And I, personally, as the one who wrote up the language for the rescope, think we have a great pitch for rescoping that money. I think it makes sense, but obviously that's not up to me. So maybe that's the update here at the next meeting, and we can continue down the road of realizing this project.
Thank you. And the only other update that we have is that we've already routed the change order through the system.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe it's been signed all the way through to be able to add the BDA to the courthouse. Building. And so we were, what's that phrase, Tim, you lock and stock or whatever you think,
that's right.
You know, already. so we can pull the trigger when it's time to do
so. That's right. Love it.
Yep.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, we can comment on this.
Certainly, sure.
So the BDAs or bidirectional amplifiers was a very large topic recently at the Fire Chiefs Conference that Fire Chief State Fire Marshal McConnell went to, and also the International Wireless Communications Expo. There was a large push, a lot of seminars on BDAs, and there's changing the fire code to the BDAs, and there was 14 vendors at the IWC specifically for BDAs, and that is because the fire codes are changing where they're becoming more and more mandatory. One of the things that we're being proactive about here with ALMR, the Executive Council and the User Council, is like Mr. Rockwell suggested and mentioned, we are doing change requests to keep track of where these BDAs are being put in. I sat through a seminar with the San Francisco Fire Chief, which they said all the buildings need to have BDAs. But the problem is there's so many BDAs that they've lost track of where they're located, mm-hmm. and also how they're affecting the system, where you can have one BDA in one high-rise is actually affecting the radio traffic of the BDA and the other high-rise building across the street. So as we start adding in, and I had a meeting last week with the emergency manager from SC Borough specifically about BDAs and making sure that any BDA that is being added by the fire marshal or any other fire entity, we know where they're at, we're keeping track of them, so we can make sure that any that are put in are not interfering with radio traffic. BDAs are great, that's why they call bidirectional amplifiers, so radio traffic, but do have the capacity, if you get too many too close, to interfere with each other and eliminate the positive that you would have had on there. So the BDAs are becoming more and more on the forefront due to the National Fire Code being put on there. That's what I want to add on there. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Well, thanks, Paul. I appreciate that. That's actually a great point. I don't know how extensive, obviously, in larger communities, metro areas, like I think you mentioned San Francisco, something like that, a lot of high-rise buildings and the materials used in those buildings, you know, make the BDAs necessary. It's certainly something to keep in mind here. Out of ignorance here, is there currently, I'll ask, an inventory, a cataloged list, a way of determining where, what structures have them in them and which don't?
Well, Mr. Chair, we do have change requests where they're going in. We have one pre for the Rabenas Courthouse. There is one at the Menard Center out in the valley. There's another one that we've got waiting. They're still in talks with this particular building owner to put a BDA in, so I know it's going in there. And we have some in DOD facilities that I'm not going to mention for obvious reasons. But we do have a list of several BDAs. There might be some out there that I'm not aware of, but as I become aware of them, we work on change requests to document where they are. But we do have a running list of BDAs that are installed and touching the ALMR system now.
Yeah, you have a BDA at the Whittier Tunnel.
Yep, that's
right. You have a BDA at the airport.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. Sorry. Yeah, hey, Mr. Chair, one issue that we have is, you know, Alaska is a home rule state, and so therefore the municipalities/boroughs can, you know, make their own rules. Wasilla and Fairbanks have been working through requiring BDAs in large buildings that would be impacted. So, for example, Walmart builds a new building, mm-hmm. they would automatically install a BDA. The thing is, they have to coordinate with us, right,
yeah.
to be able to put it on the system. What we don't know is if they just find out from some other contractor that, you know, what to do or where to put it. It could sneak on without us knowing it.
Is that part of the building code nowadays?
That's what we were just talking about. It is part of the building code. And that's the borough, and in Fairbanks, I don't know if it is yet, but they've been discussing being part of the building code.
I would say it's part of the building code. If they were inspected, they would have to have that to pass inspections to move forward. Let me ask a question. This is a dumb guy that doesn't understand BDA other than it's amplifying the signal does it have a receiver and does it transmit? And if it does it care if it's FDMA or TDMA signal? Does the amplification receiver transmitter have to be updated for TDMA, flashed, touched in any manner? Those are questions that I think we probably should think about. I don't know the answer to that. That's why I'm asking you smart Motorola guys.
Well, yes, the smart BSA guys.
I'm going to say yes. Yeah. I mean, it's all about modulation, AM, FM, you know.
Kind of made sense, but I didn't wanted to ask. So we have to add our BDAs onto the TDMA, the flash requirement.
Right, so assuming that those radios that are in those BDAs are a radio that is, per se, on the system, they can be a passive BDA, in a sense, you know, where it's not an actual radio with a radio ID, it's just receiving the signal
and
retrans.
It is just a retrans. So as it retrans, does it care what the modulation is? That's
absolutely
the other story. So, you know, the modulation for TDMA is different than FDMA, and so that would
Absolutely. It definitely would care because it has to demodulate it. It's audio that gets passed to the next radio, which then remodulates it.
The retrans process.
Yeah.
With added power. So I would suspect that we'll have to address updating those or flashing those. I will take the action and get with Zach and find out the technical aspects of flashing the DoD versions. But it would be good for us to know where they all are and then find out who's the owner responsible for that. And so we can identify it.
It'd
be a shame for us to get there and be full of TDMA and our in-building doesn't work because we not address that.
You'll only know what you know.
Right.
So you know where your DOD BDAs are. The state would know where their state BDAs are and the state, cities, munis, however shit you have. The private businesses, you won't know.
That's correct.
And you will know.
When we have to go in one.
Yeah. Right. When you figure out there's a problem here, there's too much noise, this is going on, and then you can buy equipment that will actually pinpoint and find that. And then you can go in and basically tell them, and it's kind of like when someone's stepping on your frequencies as well. You can go in and say, why is this person on 4.9? They're not allowed on 4.9, and you can find that, and you can kick them off of it. Very cumbersome process, but in Washington, we found a lot of those, and unfortunately, there were a lot of state government, Washington State, LNI, put up this beautiful building in Tumwater, Washington, and they put the low E glass all the way around it, and they couldn't get any signal in the building. They hired a contractor that came in and put VDAs on all their floors. And then they turned up the power to basically ruin the signal for everybody else all around them.
Mm-hmm.
That's how we found them. So it can get messy, but it's not something where you could just kind of go, we're going to fix the VDAs. You can fix,
we can
upgrade
fix
what you have.
Do you have to license VDAs?
No.
It should be the
retrans.
Yeah.
It's a retrans. Yeah. Typically not.
They're going to be within the same locational region of the FCC license under the same frequency, so it would apply all as one entity.
There's a certain amount of power.
It might not be a bad idea to build a dummy record for it and put it in the database so it's identified for interference analysis purposes, but other than that, it's not required to be licensed.
So through the chair, Mr. Woodall, we've been keeping track with a change request, and that also tells me who's responsible for that device. But keep in mind also the BDA come in 7800 megahertz, VHF, UHF, depending on what they're using. One BDA, you can have it set up for different things. But like Mr. Pixel said, probably San Francisco is they're interrupting each other's frequencies, so nobody's radios are working anymore. So they put them in and lost track of where they're at. Here in Alaska, we've got to get on the forefront and make sure we don't lose sight of where these are. But I do have a meeting set up through the state fire marshals. They have a monthly meeting with all their other entities. They've asked myself, Mr. Stormo, and Mr. Fonestock to sit in and talk about BDAs to the other fire departments. So if there are some out that we don't know about, we can start documenting them. So We're trying to be proactive on that.
Yeah, thank you. You might want to put in your next newsletter for people who own BDAs to consider including that in their TDMA budget.
Okay. Newsletter. I just want to say that you said it. Thank you, Paul, and group. Newsletters have just been awesome. The one about CDA, again, I appreciate it.
No worries.
Thank you.
Very good. Other comments about
Directional amplifiers? Motorola Operations Services Contract.
Mr. Stormo.
Stormo, speak on that at all?
There hasn't made changes yet. They need to re-engage with previous procurement now that they've had some people change over there. And,
yeah.
And start the process up for how we're going to get the next contract going. We've got two more years left, basically. And it's
18 months, I think.
We'll
do it at 26.
June
of
26.
June of 26.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, from a contract
perspective. Yeah, there's probably nothing wrong with getting it done early. It doesn't have to start until June 26, so we could start it early if we wanted the new contract to go in force before that, instead of executing the next option or the last option. Yet. So it wouldn't hurt to start early. So.
Ever hurts, and with the, I guess, the rate of business that they have over there and the amount of that, always a good thing to start earlier than you can. It's a lot of, figuratively speaking, there's a lot of people walking in their door saying, hey, I need this, but the good thing is I don't need it until next Friday. And so they're like, oh my goodness, on a constant basis. So, early is a good thing.
I do that too.
Yeah. I've never done that.
Myself. Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Me
yeah. Okay. Questions, comments, input on the services contract? No one online. Okay.
We could probably table that one for now.
Until
we actually start the contract process, or do you want to keep it active there, Scott?
No, it can be tabled. I mean, we need to have some probably behind the scenes conversation anyways with the idea of the in-state to figure out what requirements may want to change or not change, and what is the funding going to be allocated towards it. All that's going to factor in what we're trying to do.
For the record, we can just say tabled as the contract participants do the initial performance identification, your contract requirements.
When we did it the last time, years ago, for this particular contract time, DOD and the state in the same room, you remember that?
Yes.
Or we put up together.
Yes.
We may want to do that. I mean, well, we know what we have and what we have been using.
Right.
And if that there are additions to coverage or deletions that we want to cover, that would be probably a good idea.
And I think that'd have to be approved by the contract officer, or a contract officer would have to be involved in that process. So I'll leave that to Scott.
I think we have a unique advantage that, Tim has been through this probably two or three times, and I've been through it one time. So we probably have some stuff that we've learned over the years that we'd like to try to do different. And if we would turn it over as much as everybody else turns over, we'd be starting from scratch again. So I think we've got some things that we want to see if we can incorporate in this that make things smoother and better for all parties. So whether that's the way things that are currently done or adding things to it that aren't part of the contract right now. So.
Okay, so more discussions to come, topic tabled until there's a
relevant and meaningful update.
Yeah. And what I want to say is by checking with the contract officer, we wouldn't want to eliminate, cause some kind of prejudice or
sure.
by mm-hmm. talking to you directly without the contracting officer mm-hmm. saying how they're going to execute the contract. So,
yep.
So if we talked to you, you were involved, they would potentially eliminate you or cause some, or could create someone protesting if they caught wind that we had that. Just yeah. trying to keep things yeah. at the legal yeah. level from
not
the contract.
Inadvertently screwing up some type of procurement process.
Yes. Or we can just kick them out.
I'm sorry, but I don't think that prohibits us from sitting down and talking about what we currently have and what where we see problems. But I don't know that we could actually address solutions or way forward, but we certainly could talk about where we see yeah. problems.
Okay. Anything else on that topic? Okay. Next item, the Tudor Road electrical work. Talked about staff.
Some updates to that. The changing out the battery system was turned into a way too big of a nightmare for a lot of the different electrical work that had to be done in the building. So we have fallen back to the easiest solution, which is just changing out the current 12-volt batteries that are about 8 years old with new 12-volt batteries, even though it's not necessarily a system that the manufacturer says is still in support, but at this point, the activity to change it over would be too disruptive. So we'll just get the batteries refreshed. As part of the building electrical system update, we definitely want the batteries changed before that happens. We've been told by Chugach Electric that the power to the building is probably going to be lost for 2 to 3 days while they change over the transformers outside. So mm-hmm. we have been in discussions with Alcan Electric through the state electrical contract to wire the backup generator through different panels that will be safe for the transformer work that's going on. That will put the parts of the building that we would much rather not have offline for 2 or 3 days. We may not have lights or computers working over here, but if we can keep the master site and the frame room up where the columns are flowing through, we need to see that happen and need to kind of test and prove that it works. But in the end, it kind of gets down to we might have to do it anyway. So there's good and bad to that. I think we will quickly discover that everybody's space plan starts with a P and ends with a P. They don't have any alternate communications or contingency communications or emergency communication. That's in the FEMA conference this week where that was kind of heavily talked about, and most people cut budget for that type of stuff because that's extra cost to have redundancies and backup. So a lot of people don't fund that or they don't exercise it. So when the time comes, they're not sure how to use it. So it obviously would be painful, but, it would be a pretty good proof of concept if we ever had another type of earthquake there that knocked out power, which is what the exercise was about. You will be living in that world. So it wouldn't be the worst thing to have a pretty realistic exercise for 2 or 3 days, but yeah, too. We won't do it on purpose, but obviously we won't do it without any more improvement. But I'll have them do it while I'm on leave.
Part of the plan.
That's sort of the last
what?
Time. Yeah. Last time Scott said it could only happen if I have a golf club in my hand somewhere else. Yeah. They can do it.
Yeah, we can get this prepped out here pretty good. You can
Oh yeah.
Around out there,
Yeah.
Okay.
And this highlights, there's other technologies that we have never implemented, like DSR, that would allow this master site to be offline, and we would just roll it over to another one, whether it's the meeting or the one in Fairbanks, and this would be a minimal impact technical event. But that, again, is like the PACE plan. It's expensive to robust this stuff up, but if that technology exists to make this even more robust, but without it, we
we may have to do stuff like take the town for a couple of days. So.
Yeah. Okay, and remind me again the time frame on this.
It'll be sometime in the summer. We still have not got a solid date from Chief Gas Electric when they think they can do the work.
Okay.
But it'll all be quiet. It's not going to happen unless everybody's well aware of it. Yeah. Had an opportunity that even if we're saying we don't expect an outage, it's just like we want to make sure people are aware of what could happen and their alternate comms. They've at least tested it and tried it to make sure they're ready for it just in case something does happen.
Okay. Well, yeah, that could be a significant event. Planning prevents it from being what I call an RGE, resume generating event, for somebody.
Why do you look at me?
Not intentional. Not really intentional, but, Yeah, certainly that's an important topic, but I know that it's being discussed and companies are responsible parties are planning for it. So, okay. Questions or inputs on that? Meaningful input on that?
Sorry.
No. Just kidding. Okay, great. All right. Unless we've missed any old business stuff, we're going to move on. User council update.
Thank you, Chair. I missed the last user council. As I understand, there are two positions, U.S. Army, if I get my phone back up, alternate and primary, that they're awaiting appointment. Other than that, I think as far as the council itself, it's fully staffed. Topics have been around the upgrade and around the TDMA requirement. I think the inventory that we talked about earlier is extremely pertinent. And the user council is on board because there's all good reasons to move forward on board with this. The only caveat that I want to add is just the funding angle. We're all concerned about funding. We're looking at grants. We're looking maybe to DOT to see what we can do to NHTSA. We're looking at can we use broadband money. We're trying to look outside the traditional box of your just capital items or what have you. I mean, I don't know why I use them, but I always say, what about community like fire department? Mm-hmm. They're already trying to do bake sales just to get that fuel in their fire trucks. How difficult is it for them to be able to spend, $6,000-$10,000 on radios? So that's my update from user council. If anybody has questions, seeing none,
I would say I do believe that the Army's user council representatives. I think we sent you a letter. So he has the appointment already. So
perfect.
Let the record show that the Army has duly appointed and Colonel Meerstein has put his signature approval on that in the operations management office as those personnel's names.
Thank you. It's so good. Okay. Very good. Mr. Fussy, I'll hand it over to you for stuff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So we'll start out with training and outreach. So been a pretty busy quarter for us. The new April video vignette, communications incident reporting has been put out. So Mr. Nelson is continuing to put out the video on there, but we're actually getting positive feedback from people who have been watching the videos on there. So that's been really good. Recently, the state forestry was training their new incident commanders. They do this class every couple of years, and myself and some of the APSCS personnel were asked to go out and work with their folks, their incident commanders, on the radios. So we went out there for the day, worked with their radios, talked to them on how to access ALMR And then we gave them a class on how to use their Iridium radios. Because there's a big difference about using the Iridium radios. The thing was that the DPS is looking at where you've got to slow your process down when you want to use them. And so it was pretty good. And then Tony and I were invited back the next day to observe their incident tabletop exercise that they were doing. And we were there to make sure that there wasn't any hiccups when they were working on their radios. When you've got a large group of incident commanders, we wanted to make sure that the radios worked like they were supposed to when they're at ALMR and there wasn't any busies and it flowed through there pretty good. So that was really good on there. We got some good feedback and positive feedback from forestry for being out there.
Great.
Excuse me. I did attend the SEOC monthly training regarding the Tsunami Center, and through that, talking to the individuals, we received the invite to what Mr. Stormo was talking about, the FEMA concept meeting out there. So myself, Mr. Clementsock, Mr. Stormo went out there, and we were there to answer questions about ALMR with the 9.0 earthquake. So it was a very productive meeting out there. And then I did attend the March and February APIP meeting at the Alaska Partnership for Infrastructure Protection. And as a entity for ALMR, if there is a natural disaster, we need to be involved in those. So that's why I attend those meetings on there. Last week was the 2024 Emergency Preparedness Conference that was held downtown at the Egan Center. That was put on by the state DHSEM. And I was asked to give a presentation on ALMR. So given an hour time slot, talked about ALMR, the history of it, where we're at, and then also took some maps down so everybody can see where the towers are at and how the SAT system integrates into ALMR and how it's jointly owned and operated by DOD and state. A lot of people came up to me later saying that they didn't realize it was a joint agency. You know, the Zone 1, Zone 2, and of course Zone 4, A1, which is part of the anchored system, most people thought it was just a state system. They didn't realize the large, complex interagency and interoperability that we do for there. So it was good to be out there on that one. Like I said, the rehearsal of concepts we did on that one. moving over to the project status update, the snow, Nick and his team have been very busy, even though we've been getting dumped out with snow over and over. excuse me, they've conducted 12 PMIs and site inspections since January already. So they're being proactive all through this terrible weather we've been going through, making sure that the towers are up to speed, any updates, screening any of the appearances on that one. The Motorola team did arrive on April 2nd and started with the Blueberry start and preceded the other ones. That is changing out, putting the Juniper routers into the site in anticipation of GDMA. So that's up and running on that one. And then there were some issues with some sites up by Fairbanks, east of Birch Hill with the DOD. And Scott and his team went out and assisted with the microwave backhaul on that one and got that up and running. I don't want to speak too much. Scott, do you have anything you want to add to that one?
Well, it's a very old microwave that has been in a very place for a while. Finally started failing, and we weren't, because it was different specs and we didn't have parts to try to help fix it. So it was, I think, fairly lucky that we got a 7705 available, and the range guys up there had microwave that connected from where Quarry Hill down set to Donley Dome, so we were able to put a 7705 at DOD's Quarry Hill site, route traffic to the DOD microwave down at Donley Dome, and then carry it back on state microwave back to Birch Hill. So that's what that MPLS network is all about. I think that, you know, we've been talking with the DOD about trying to find out who's our equivalents at all the DOD sites, so we can try to be more proactive on getting that, you know, that type of redundancy set up for everybody. So it seemed to be a pretty bad situation because it was a couple of weeks of those, all the sites east, you know, Quarry Hill and east, for the DOD where going down, up, down, up, down, up, down. The, all the dispatch on the aisle center wing right up there was going up, disconnected, but it was really no ability for it to be fixed if it wasn't for the fact that, you know, we had a relationship with some people and understood that there might be a way to create an alternate path. And that's, we need to have more of that relationship going so we know how to try to fix these things together in the future as quickly as possible. So, otherwise, I mean, if we didn't know about that, that probably would have said, still be broken now and would be broken. So, the microwave was able to be replaced here in the spring. So,
I'm fine. It's great.
So, anybody have any questions before I move on to the metrics?
To the Chair, Paul, I do have a statement again for Scott and his team. Scott and his team have been doing a remarkable job. When he says, luckily we had, many times he is one deep. Many times he has one spare or sometimes no spares. Number one, thank you, Scott, for doing a fabulous job keeping the system going as you have. But I also want to remind everybody that this is a system that is no different than any huge mainframe or any big computer system. It needs to be maintained, updated, and that takes funding. And one thing that Scott's being forced to work with is low funding. And I don't mean to beat a dead horse here or make anything sound negative because he's doing a great job with what he has. And it's just, I want to remind everybody that he is only one deep on some of these different aspects. We had a conversation regarding network managers and network, people with network in this whole shop. He's down to like one person who understands the routers and switches and program. It's hard to get qualified people. And then especially when we have very few positions open for that kind of work. Thank you for letting me add that.
Very good. Paul? Very good.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
March metrics.
So we start looking at the monthly group and individual calls. We're down from last year. However, we're still over 1.4 million. And it's kind of interesting. I usually get to the office here about 6:30 in the morning, and then we can see what calls are there already for the day. And a lot of times we are pushing between 9,300 and 10,000 calls by 6:30 in the morning, every morning. So it's a busy system. Even though the numbers are down, we've already had that. What that means, up to 10,000 people have pushed and keyed their radio by 6:30 in the morning. So it's amazing how many people are using it. So our monthly push and talks, we're down a little bit. We're at 2.2 million, down from last year also. So looking at monthly busies, we had 461, but if you look, we're not even at a percentage. And I want to explain the February spike. That is when the DOD had a huge exercise in the Fort Greeley area, and they put an additional 10,000 troops into that area. So, yes, there's a huge spike in busies. We're at 2,068, but we're only at 0.0014%. And we monitored it quite a bit. So one of the issues was 10,000 people in that small area. Also, when Nick and I were watching it, and some people were on the radio up to 45 seconds.
Oh.
And when you're on the radio for 45 seconds at a four-channel site, we're going to get busy. So the system, yes, and I want to be very clear, yes, there's a huge spike in busy, but that amount of people, that small area, that limited towers, that amount of time on the radio, the system handled it. So I just want to be very blunt with that. The system handled it. So
radio etiquette classes out there.
And if you look at the sites below 3.9, we're at 10. And then if you look, quite a few of them were at the PMIs and then the GCI circuit issues. I know that some folks from Scott's team have been talking to GCI. They're starting to change what they were doing. What happened is GCI decided to do an upgrade with their connection down to Southeast and never told us. And that crashed several sites down to Southeast where the dispatchers didn't know the system was down because they weren't getting alert on their consoles at all. And then the troopers were just trying to call dispatch and couldn't get through. So it was a flurry of emails, phone calls, a lot of one-on-one, and now we're GCI. I'm starting to get emails from them also now. We'd like to take the circuit down. We want to do this upgrade. Well, you can't because of A, B, and C. Because if we're going to work on that GCI circuit, it's similar to when Nick and I do our quarterly upgrade. We reach out and contact every dispatch center in the state to make sure nothing's going on before we roll the zones over. So if there's something going on, we're not interrupting a chase or a barricaded subject.
Yeah.
GCI, I don't mean to pick on them, however, they're the culprit in this one, did not notify us, and we lost all connectivity with dispatch centers in Southeast. Thankfully, nothing was going on at that time. We got lucky, dodged a bullet. Let's not keep doing it.
Did we send them a letter to identify the issue and ask them to establish a procedure to coordinate with the operations management office?
Through the chairman, Smordall, we have the letter. It's wrapped up. We're having a couple more people take a look at it before it goes out. But we have the letter written up in draft form right now, Mr. Woodall.
Is there a way to make them to identify that circuit as a public safety circuit so that in your letter, I mean, because this happened down in the lower 48 too with mm-hmm. CenturyLink, and we identified the circuits that the links that they were using as public safety circuits, and then okay, we went, you know, because they were just nilly willy doing upgrades. Fortunately, they were doing them at 3 o'clock in the morning,
right,
on a Tuesday instead of, you know, 3 o'clock in the morning on a Friday, but now they've identified those circuits as public safety and they're a different protocol that they have to use.
We're stressing public safety circuits and the circuits that are on contract, but I don't want to list every single one on there because if there's one I don't know of, I don't want them to go, that's not on the list, I'm just going to roll it and not tell anybody.
Yep.
So, and they are, they're CSP coded circuits.
Okay, right? Good.
But things have gotten so complicated with, you know, MPLS network and mesh networking that it's not a physical path anymore. So
right.
I think people don't realize all the time what they're impacting when they're doing something. You don't know what traffic was flowing through that when you included that router. So life's getting a lot more complicated while it's, you know, a little more robust. But it makes things better, but it makes it harder to plan for some of that stuff.
Yeah,
and they know their TSP coded circuits. We were contracted to, you know, these need to never go down. We understand they're going to go down, but you need to design this in a way that you're trying to make them never go down. But they're a big company, so, you know, the people that are all on the end turning the screwdriver don't always maybe get that message. So.
But that's all I have for the metrics. If any of you have questions, I'd like to move on.
Yes, if I could have through you to Nick address the interference that's occurring up at the Northern Interior area. So,
through the chair, Mr. Fonestock.
Sure. So as you said, there's been interference. I know interference. So, I mean, even since when I first got here in 2019, there's a repetitive interference issue essentially going on up north. I don't know if you want me to say relatively location or around the Birch Hill area, sometimes down into the Donnelly Dome area as well. I've been working with Mr. Woodall here to try to identify who, what, where, when, all, you know, all that type of information. We have some suspects that I'm not going to name, but there's definitely some interference that is causing disruption for a lot of users up in that area.
Including local government?
Yes.
I would go over the range of users that are being affected. So from the DOD standpoint, we have gone through all of our authorized assignments. We've identified assignments that are close to the VHF assignments. It's happening on the in the 138 to 144 megahertz range. It's not in the 154 to 15665 public safety range. So it's happening in the military, what is called military tactical training bands. We have licensed air to ground radios that operate at 50 watts that are close, but they're a meg off. They should there should not be any issues unless there's some tuning issues with the radios. So we're having the techs go back, go through all the radios. We've also sent up a joint spectrum interference report to the national level. So that goes all the way up to the NTIA, National Telecommunications Information Administration. It will help us by submitting that report if we can't resolve it locally to get a national level team to come down with the, some better resources to DF and identify. They'll bring in some engineers that will determine what the interference is. But we have to get we have to do all our homework here, try to resolve it, give them all the information, continue the reporting process. But we are working that. So good idea to let when people fear or being their operations are being impacted by that, we do want them, even though it's been happening, rather than just not reporting it, we would rather they, even though they feel like they're reporting it over and over, we want them to report because we need to capture the times and the characteristics of the signal that is interfering with them. So that's important in helping us to resolve it. So we would pass to those agencies that are up there. If you could get the word out, if they're receiving that interference, please report it through the operations management office, and then we can continue to try to figure out what's causing it, who the interfering signal is coming from.
So it goes back to your earlier conversation, a rogue BDA right down the road at the local telecom company.
Could be.
You just don't know.
Yeah.
But there's tools that I would think Nick would have that pinpointed by now.
We have some of those tools, but even with said tools, it's a very broad range that it's occurring on. And also exactly pinpointing who it is and making them essentially take accountability or you know of that situation is like you know it's a process.
And it's not every day, it's on and off, it's intermittent, and that's why it's important. If in the end we have to pay for a team to come down and camp out there with DF equipment and so forth, that's what we'll do. That's the alternative we have at this point. Again, we're doing all the detective work we can do to try to identify any source and ensuring that equipment is properly tuned and operating the standard and so forth so that we can rule that out. Again, you can never rule out a rogue individual tuning his radio with a frequency that he's not authorized to use unless you catch him in the act. I can look at everything I've licensed and say, well, it's licensed and it's passed all the engineering routines that would say it would not interfere. So So they're either using more power than they're supposed to, they're either got a bad radio, it's not tuned properly, or they're moving at a frequency.
We had a similar issue in Washington, and it was intermittent, which made it almost impossible. So every time we sent our team out there,
yeah,
everything's turned off and gone. And I'll make a real long story short, you know who the offender was? It was a Trident submarine that would surface in the middle of the Puget Sound, and then they would send that signal out, and that would knock out all of the frequencies for Snohomish PUD that they were operating in that range.
Well, we have a submarine come up on.
It's a balloon from my
But the intermittent
balloon.
Yeah.
You surface them so
yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's fantastic. Okay. Wow. That's something.
Can you continue, Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Yes.
Thank you. So everyone, this is Paul again, trying to finish up my report. Really good conversations on interference on that one, so something we need to keep track of. So other items, I myself and members of the APSCA and the APSCS, and then the SMO, like I said earlier, attended the IWC that was back in the last week of March. Really good information on that, really good seminars. The quarterly Gilmar newsletter was mailed out to all the legislatures yesterday. It is now posted on our website and electronic copy sent out to all the members. So I strongly encourage everyone to take a look at it. A lot of good articles in there. Also, this week, April 14th to the 20th, is the National Public Safety Telecommunications Week. And then April is also Emergency Communications Month. So I'd like to give a thank you to all the public safety dispatchers that are keeping everyone safe out there. Also, April 15th to the 19th is National Work Zone Awareness Week. The DOT is a very large member of ALMR, and I just want to let everybody know that construction season is starting back up in Alaska again, and this is the National Work Zone Awareness Week. On March 4th, at the request of myself, I had the Zone 1 master site inspected by the State Fire Marshal's Office and the Plan Review Supervisor for Fire Suppression Compliance. We got the report back saying that the Zone 1 master site meets the current fire codes. However, if we want to look at something to be added on, we could look at it later. But right now, the way the Zone 1 master site is set up, we do meet all fire codes. So one of those things where I do my inspections around the building, wanted to take a look at it and make sure we are in compliance and Zone 1 is in compliance. Also, the SCLC conducted briefings this week on Riverwatch. For anyone who's not familiar with Riverwatch, that's when DHSEM starts looking at breakup for YK Delta, specifically the Fairbanks area, Kenai River, southeast. So we're going to be monitoring that, making sure that it's not going to affect any of our sites. Fairbanks every once in a while does flood out. Areas in southeast will flood out because of the ice jams. So we're going to be monitoring that, seeing how the ice is going away and hopefully doesn't affect any of our sites near the rivers. The last thing I have, I just want to say thank you to Chief Curl. In a former life, we worked together and I appreciated his wisdom and his knowledge on emergency management and all the meetings we went to and the disasters and that. So just want to say thanks to Chief Curl and happy retirement. That ends my report, Mr. Chair.
All right. Well, thanks, Paul. It was comprehensive. It was good. And yes, good discussion, good information passed there about the stuff ongoing. And for the record, hopefully we don't have any surfacing subs in Fairbanks.
Somebody out there playing with HARP.
Yeah, HARP. Oh gosh, don't start that. The phone will start ringing again. Yeah. So, okay, excellent. Any questions or comments, further questions or comments on the report from Mr. Fussy? Not seeing any, hearing any. Moving on in the schedule or agenda, rather, to new business. New business items to discuss. Anybody want to jump in the arena?
Anybody on the phone?
No.
Okay. Nothing. No new business. Okay. You know what that means? We're at the end of the agenda here. I guess the last item on the agenda here is talking about the next meeting. I've already got the date. The date being the 25th of July. The time being 1:30 p.m. And the location being right where we're at here for the next meeting. So please put that on your calendars if you would, for those in the room and on the phone. And I'm sure there'll be communications coming out regarding relevant documents, the agenda for that meeting, and whatnot. So with that, any closing comments or questions of me or anybody else? Okay. If nothing, the meeting's adjourned. The April.
Move to adjourn.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, I think I'm more powerful than I.
I'll second that.
There you go. Deputy commissioner, you know, a guy with not having a real job here. So yes, is there a motion to adjourn the meeting, the April 18th meeting of the ALMR Executive Council?
Mr. Woodall. Or Colonel Meerstein will make the motion to adjourn the meeting.
Thank you, sir. So a second? Not, I'll second. For the record, Brian Barlow, since I thought I could just end it without anybody. So, okay, with that, the meeting's adjourned. Thank you.